Welcome to Atomic Moms, a modern parenting podcast about the joys and complexities of caring for our children and ourselves. I'm Ellie Noss, and since 2014, we've been celebrating and commiserating with world-class experts, best-selling authors like today and moms around the world. Hi, everyone. Okay, before we get started, will you please subscribe on iTunes? If you have an Apple phone, you can just go to Apple Podcasts and then search Atomic Moms and then press subscribe. It's free. You can get all of our episodes there as well. Please leave a written review and share the podcast with some friends. Or if you're in like a Facebook mom group, leave the link. That's my holiday wish. Thank you so much. Today, we're going to Broadway. Actually, for the next 2 weeks, we're going to Broadway because next week I am sharing an interview with Casey Levy, who is the Broadway star of Frozen. She plays Elsa. So definitely subscribe so you get that next week. And this week, yeah, we have a comedic genius on, Mike Birbiglia. He's a comedian, storyteller, director, actor, pizza enthusiast, and New York Times bestselling author who is currently making his Broadway debut in his solo show, The New One. Mike, thank you for coming on Atomic Moms.
Thank you very much, Ellie.
So my friends should never, ever name drop in front of me because here you are. Your dear old friend, Ed, who you shared earlier before we were recording, that you guys met your first day of college. He and his wife, my best friend, Whitney, they took care of Sabrina, who was 4 years old when my daughter Eliza was born. Like, they were the ones I called. And
oh my gosh, really?
They were my first line of defense. So moms out there, you need the friends without kids because they're the only ones that are going to really help you in your time of need. And I'm curious, Mike, do you have like friends without kids that you have to lean on like I do with Ed and Whit?
We don't have that as much. We have Jen's grandparents, or Jen's parents, Una's grandparents are phenomenal, and they're very doting and great with Una, and so we have that, and they live in New York City nearby. So that we've been very lucky for that. I don't think we have. I make the joke in the show is like, I've lost a lot of great friends to kids.
Yes.
But it really is true. Like I'm 40. I think I'm like I'm pretty much the last of the group to not have kids. I mean, I have a few comedian friends who don't have kids, but those people are not reliable. Comedians are not reliable. I'm surprised to hear you say that Ed is even reliable. Although Ed is a bit of a superhero type of personality, so I could see him stepping up.
Yes, he literally is a superhero. Like, if there's crime on the corner, like, Ed's the first one there. It is shocking.
Oh, I know. Literally. Yes. I mean, just for the listeners so they know, like, I think perhaps saved someone's life in like some kind of street altercation, and then he ended up going to the hospital.
In Hollywood, it was horrendous.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, there are true life superheroes. I'm so lucky that they're both in our life, mostly so that I can talk to you.
Yes, and here we are.
Here we are.
Atomic Moms.
I was fortunate enough to see
long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. we're all buying that. I was fortunate enough to see your Broadway one-man show, The New One. It's at the Court Theater. And it was so crazy. Mike, I was on a blind mom date for that one. I contacted a listener.
Oh, I didn't even know that. So that's the thing. What is that?
I had never met this mother, and she has been so supportive as a listener of the podcast that I reached out to her and I was like, will you be my mom date to this? And she was like, yes.
Oh my God.
And it was a little awkward because we were laughing so hard. And she's very pregnant, so I should have been more respectful of her personal space. But like, I was crying on her shoulder. I was laughing so hard.
Oh my
like,
gosh.
I feel like you really brought us to like a new level. Like, we're fast friends now because we bonded over how I don't want to say horrible parenting is, but just how hard it is. So thank
you
for that.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
I mean, that's the thing that I'm trying to capture in the show, and which is like, I try to say the things that I was secretly thinking through the pregnancy and through the first year of Una's life, but felt like I couldn't say. And I feel like you try to, you're doing the same thing, it seems like.
Yes, exactly. I'm curious, you know, people never used to be this honest about parenting. And like even hearing you stand on stage say some of the things you say feels shocking at times.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's shocking for me sometimes. Sometimes I'm saying it, I'm like, huh, am I saying this on stage to 1,000 people? This is a very strange thing to do.
Well, it must feel validating to get that standing ovation at the end. You're like, I won them over. Like, I could say all these things and still they're with me.
It is, although it's funny, the whole thing's a double-edged sword, because you know, like, you know, you can't go on the internet and find out what people, what everyone thinks, because then people are like, he just wants applause for just being a dad. You know what I mean? You're like, yeah. No, I don't. I have a lot of sort of jokes and candid thoughts and a story arc, and I'm not begging for applause, but the internet's wild. The internet's wild, man. Like, it's,
yeah.
Well, because, you know, we had reviews come out this week and they were really good and favorable, and it helped the show, and it helps us because we're going to go 12 more weeks. We're going to go end of January. So
congratulations.
Like, it's, you know, you sort of have, it's weird with Broadway. Like, I don't know if you've been close to this, but like, you sort of have to have the reviews be good. Mm-hmm. like there's this moment last week where I was like, saying to my wife, like, I think like, if the reviews are bad, maybe the show closes or whatever, but then they were good. But then the internet is its own other thing. Like, people, if you expose yourself, I don't know if you have this with this pod, if you expose yourself, you're really opening yourself up to criticism from strangers that is so personal.
So personal. I know. I've been really lucky that this show isn't that popular. No, I'm kidding. I just find the lucky thing with a podcast, and why I haven't done transcriptions, which I think I will, is that it has protected me some from any attacks that I might get. Because unlike a blog, if it's a podcast without a transcription, like, you have to invest some time in listening to it.
Oh, yeah, they have to spend some time on it. Yeah, you're right.
And I feel like the trolls are a little lazy for that.
Yes.
But I've definitely gotten some, like, helpful suggestions via email that have, like, totally destroyed me.
I like the way you
me.
Said helpful.
Like, the one that,
the
like,
way you said helpful was really delicate. Some helpful suggestions.
One was like, your guests are so interesting. Can you please share less so we can hear from them? It's like, that one set me back a good few months.
Oh my God.
But I'm wondering, okay, overall though, like, people were not this honest about parenting before. Do you think it's because it's so much harder these days, like, with everyone's expectations, and moms are getting scrutinized for every choice, and most of us don't live near family like you guys luckily do, and like, we can't just lock our kids out of the house all day? Or do you think that the previous generations were just big fat liars? Like, which is it?
I think both of those things can be true. I think I grew up in a Catholic household in Massachusetts. I make this joke in one of my other albums. I was an altar boy as a kid, and the answer is no, I wasn't.
Oh my God.
And I think it's because they knew I was a talker. I have that look about me, but it really was like it was a repressed existence in a certain way. Like, in my first show, Sleepwalk With Me, I talk about how my dad growing up would say, like, don't tell anyone about almost anything, you know.
Yes.
I'd be late to soccer practice and he'd be like, don't tell anyone, you know. and so my whole comedy, you know, the four shows I've done off Broadway and this one made on Broadway, has been like, you know what, I'm going to tell people. I'm going to say how I feel about all these things, and I'm going to try to structure it in a way that's compelling and hopefully makes people laugh, and then really hopefully makes people cry sometimes. It just so happens that this show is about a period in my life about when I, you know, becoming a dad, when I genuinely didn't want to be a dad. I mean, I genuinely thought like, yeah, this doesn't feel right. And Jen thought it was a good idea. And I love Jen. And I just, it was a real fork in the road, and I did it. And I'm so glad I did. When I wrote the show, I was like, oh, I got to make sure that I get in all of the true feelings that I felt at the time, now that they're sort of all erased. You've probably talked about that on the show. It was like post-pregnancy, you sort of forget what the pregnancy was like. And I wanted to sort of have that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be honest about the before.
Yeah, I think that's what's so refreshing, is that it's so rare to hear that.
Oh, thanks.
Like, no one shares these things. You met your wife, Jen, when you were 25. I was 23 when I met my husband, Adam. And, you know, at 23, I was like, of course I want kids. And then we're married and, you know, another year goes by. And he's like, I want kids. And I'm like, yeah, me too, someday. And then we're married for like many years and I'm kind of running out of excuses. And the only time I ever tried stand up, it was all about not wanting kids. And then I got a tumor. So then I got another year off from having
kids.
Oh,
we have a lot in common. You and I have a lot in common.
So
yeah. Because I hit that note in my show too.
I know. My first line of the stand-up, I mean, you do it so much better, but it was me saying, I don't want to have kids. Like, I don't want to have strangers in my house. And he's like, who, the nanny? And I'm like, no, the baby. And I really felt.
That's great.
That's very kind of you.
How do you not continue doing stand-up?
Oh, please. Because I have a parenting podcast. I'm very, very fulfilled,
okay,
Mike.
Okay. That's a great joke.
Well, thank you. So I did it for him, okay? Like, I made that leap for him. And it is so difficult, and it's very satisfying.
Oh, yeah, beyond.
But it's so difficult that there are so many times when I've been like, oh, my God, if this man hadn't been 100% on board, like, I don't know where we would be right now. Because if I had a partner who was super resistant to having kids, it would be that much harder. And I know that there's a lot of moms out there listening who are like, yeah, my partner wasn't on board, or this was a surprise, or, you know, a lot of women are having to do most of it themselves. What did you do to sustain your marriage through that first year? Like, how did you sustain your marriage through that first year that is so difficult, especially since you weren't originally on board?
Well, I would this is sort of where the show came from. I would write in my journal a lot because I never felt comfortable saying the things I say in the show to people in my life, because I felt like I was betraying my wife. And that's something I think a lot of people deal with. Like, I have a lot of dads who come up to me after the show, like, you know, friends or friends of friends who go like, bro, like, that's exactly how I felt. Like, mm-hmm. like, and you can't say it to anybody, you know? And and so I wrote in my journal, which I know that seems like sort of a hackneyed piece of advice, but I really stand by it. Like, I think oftentimes if you write in your journal just what happens in your day and how what you remember and how you felt, how it made you feel, that by the end of writing in the journal, even if it's a couple paragraphs in a notebook, by the end of it, you do feel a certain level of perspective about the whole thing. And I find that usually I get to the end of the journal and go, well, actually, I'm being a little irrational about this. you know, I really do. Like, there's so many things that are in the show that I wrote down and I had, like, I was like, oh, this is crazy. It's driving me nuts. And then, like, how come we can't get a babysitter? This is insane. And then at the end of it, I would write it in a journal and I would think, like, well, actually, Jen has this really profound connection with Una and she doesn't want to be away from the baby. She doesn't want Una to be with a stranger and all this stuff that, like, if you put it on paper, it gives you perspective.
Do you think that creating art out of your life also gives you perspective? Like, do you ever find yourself in a fight with Jen, but then also being the observer in the fight? Like, oh, this will be good material, or is that just me?
Wow. I think we all do that. Any writer, I think, does that to some extent. But I do with this, I actually really didn't see it coming. Like I thought it would be sort of permanently private. And even now I'm like, the stuff I'm living now, Una's 3.5, like I feel like I'm not going to put in a show or anything, but yeah, I think, you know, I think art can be a good outlet for those feelings. And I think, the good thing is, I mean, a lucky thing for me is Jen is a poet, and she was writing poetry about analogous points in our lives together. And so she was writing this book that became this little poetry book they sell in the lobby of the show called Little Astronaut. And it's these beautiful poems. And the one in the show that people could read actually in the New York Times, because it's in an article. I wrote this article for the New York Times called Six Tips for Writing a Solo Play for Broadway. And I quote this poem called An Infant Reaches. And it's... Here, I didn't plan this. I'm in my office, and I'm like, I'm standing next to a stack of them. But this poem is called Infant Reaches. An infant reaches for something, I don't know what, pushes it farther away and cries in frustration each time she reaches, not realizing she is crawling for the first time. She is just like her father. And so... Like the process of the show would be, I would be writing pieces of the show, and I would say to Jen, like, "Hey, do you remember any of the milestones? You know, because I'm writing this section about Una's milestones." And she handed me that poem. She was like, "Well, I wrote this about crawling," and I was like, "Can I just read this in the show? This seems better than me describing it by a long shot." And she was like, sure. And then she over time became like an accredited writer on the show.
And it kills when you read it on stage.
Yeah, people like it.
It's so amazing. Okay. And Little Astronaut, I'm guessing that the title is because of Merlin's magic sleep suit. Is that right?
That's really funny. No, it's not.
It's not? How could it not be? It must
the poem
be.
The poem I read, there's a poem that opens the book. It's short. It's one line. It's Little Astronaut. A newborn rests her head on the earth of mother. Everything else is outer space.
Oh, right.
And that's where Little Astronaut came from.
That's right. Well, that's more profound, but I prefer my version. Which is
but also the sleep suit was probably subconsciously in the mix.
Well, because it gets a little moment in your show. So for the three listeners who don't know about Merlin's magic sleep suit, it's this puffy suit that you stick your baby in to sleep at night. And then when they can roll over, you can't use it anymore. And the sleep goes to hell again. But it really... I don't think it worked for Una, because I read that she had a very difficult time sleeping that first year. It worked for
both.
It
worked for like a day.
Yeah.
And then it stopped working.
Well, yeah. I'm on team Magic Merlin, but what I really need to say, it was like one of the first things I ever talked about on the podcast. And when you lifted it up, I gasped. I was so excited to see it get its like moment of recognition on stage. But
people go nuts. People go nuts for the sleep suit.
It's they like really whatever
like
works.
Almost like certain nights it'll get an applause break. Just the actual holding up of the sleep suit.
That's how desperate we all are, America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the line I say in the joke. We're so desperate for a child to sleep, we will believe in magic.
Oh, that's right. That is so good. It's so true. So the proceeds go to Every Mother Counts.
Yes, for her poetry book. Yes.
And when I was looking at her website, and then I got really excited. I'm always trying to figure out a way to mention the musical Hamilton in the podcast. And she made it really easy for me today, because she mentions that the Hamilton song Dear Theodosia was playing in her head when she was writing the poetry.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, did she tell? Who did she say that to? I know that. But where did she say it in the book?
On her website.
Oh, my God. That's great. Okay.
So she says that she wrote the poetry because in the musical Hamilton, you know, it's this historically important epic masterpiece. She writes it like stops momentarily for this tender moment where, you know, Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr are both singing to their children. And some of my listeners are freaking out right now because I recorded our birth experience with my second daughter, Eliza, who's named Eliza after the show.
Oh,
I had Dear Theodosia playing on repeat So when you're hearing
me, gosh,
because during my unmedicated birth, like just little moments, or I don't want to totally freak everyone out, you can hear Dear Theodosia playing. And so you and Jen are clearly, you know, from the show, I know that you're very aware of like the political climate and the climate crisis, but then you like sneak attack our hearts with this tenderness. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that, like the, because you clearly both share that tenderness. And that's why we like start crying and we've been laughing so hard. And then all of a sudden we're like, this is the meaning of life.
Oh, that's so sweet. I think, man, I think that's truthfully, like, that's why I go to the theater. I mean, you try to make, I think we're all, whenever you're an artist or a creator of any kind, or a baker or anything that where you're creating a thing for other people, you're trying to make a thing that you would want, right? And I like to go to the theater and laugh and then cry. That's all I want. because I think Jen's the same way. I think we crave catharsis from the theater. I think we want to see ourselves in what's on stage, and it's important. I mean, you know, storytelling is important for us to contextualize our own lives and existence. And so I thought, basically, I've been working on this show for 2 years, and a lot of it would be, you know, Ira Glass, who's the host of This American Life and is a producer on the show, like he would come to versions of the show and he would say, you know, I feel like at this moment you could let this air out and you could express an emotion of how you felt at that moment, and that would go a long way. And that was part of it. And then my director, Seth Barish, was part of it. He directed all four of my shows. And then Joe was a big part of it, my brother Joe. And then my wife, Jen, was a big part of it. And that's sort of how we arrived at it. And I feel like that's sort of a long-winded way of saying it, but yeah, I just try to create what I enjoy, what I love.
You had mentioned earlier in your journaling that this like feeling of not wanting to betray your spouse, so you wanted to get it out on paper. And
yeah.
Then
yeah.
When you're on stage, how do you know like what hits you hard and is exposing, but like in a good artistic way, versus knowing if you're betraying yourself or your partner?
Well, it was all vetted, and Jen and I spent an extraordinary amount of time talking about what we were comfortable sharing with the world and what we weren't. And so, you know, Jen said this on the, in an interview the other day, I wouldn't have said this otherwise, but if she said it, I'll repeat it, which is that she told a story about how one night she had listened to a version I had done in Salt Lake City of the show, and she listened to the audio, and she had felt like it was a particularly angry sort of performance of the material. And she woke me up at like 4 a.m. and was just like, if that's how you feel about this, then, you know, I don't know what we're gonna do. Like, it was terrible. Like, it was really, really bad. And then I was like, that was sort of how I knew I'd gone too far in that one direction of expressing anger. And I sort of pulled it back to what's in the show currently, which is sort of a calibration of sort of like anger and laughter and emotion and all the spectrum of emotions versus just the frustration.
What did you do that next morning to win her back?
I drove to Vegas. I gambled away Una's college tuition and came back and I said, I'm sorry for everything. The next day, I mean, I just talked to her about how, like, I, you know, these are the parts of the show currently that I'm, that I feel like I'm exaggerating in my life for humor. And these are the parts that I feel and are real. And, you know, I want your guidance on it. I want your perspective and I want your point of view. And that's why I think it's because, I mean, Jen, I think, is a secret ingredient of the show in a certain sense, as I read three of her poems on stage and all of her lines that her character says when I quote her are really written by her. I mean, they're my versions of her saying a thing, and then she edits that, and then I edit that, and then all. But ultimately, a lot of the things she says are real. I mean, and I think, like, you know, it's delicate. Here's why I think it's delicate, and I'm sure you deal with this with the podcast, is like the way that people parent is very personal, mm-hmm. and it's very specific, and it's always different. And people choose to parent in 100,000 different ways. And I think one of the keys is not to judge the way other people parent. Lest thou make it biblical. Lest thou parenting be judged itself. But I think, like, that's the thing that's really hit home. Sometimes people will see the show, they'll be like, he's a bad dad, you know, and I'm like, easy, easy. I mean, it's a show. It's a show. Like, everybody chill out. Like, I'm a good dad. Like, Jen always says, like, whenever she sees people say that online or something, she'll be like, what's so funny is that if Una, when Una grows up, like, if she saw the show, she wouldn't even believe it. Mm-hmm. Like, she literally wouldn't grasp it. She would just think it's fictional, cartoonish jokes, you know, because I'm so doting and I'm so present. I'm so around.
What do people want? Because if you stood on stage and just talked about what a great dad you are and like how confident
that's what I always point out. Yeah. That's what I always say. I'm like, I'm not going to go. It's 80 minutes of the worst version, you know, the sort of my lowest moments. It's not 80 minutes of like, and then we went on the swings and then we went and got her favorite yogurt. People would be like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Oh my God.
Like, it would be, I'm sorry to curse on your podcast, but like people would just be like, you could beep it. I don't know.
No, I feel like Mike, that's your like Mormon mom blog. Like you could do that for us.
but it's like, look, I do that stuff. Too, but that's not an interesting show.
That's I'm not sorry. Broadway.
It's not an interesting show for me.
Right.
I'll say that.
It wouldn't reach all the men, too. And that's what's so, like, if you didn't share these things, like, there are so many men in that audience. And it's so exciting for me to see something relating to parenting where it's a full house, you're getting a standing ovation, and it's at least half men or more, and everyone's relating to it. What did your parents say? Because you said you were raised in, you know, a repressed environment. When you say, hey, guys, I'm going to go on Broadway and I'm doing, I mean, by now they're probably expecting it. But like, what's that like to say to your parents, I'm going to do 80 minutes of my low points for the world?
Well, to be fair, my parents were great, great parents. It was just, I feel like a cultural thing, like in the sort of Massachusetts Catholic cultural, which, you know, that's a whole rabbit hole unto itself. I mean, there's many movies about that, and they're great movies about just how repressed that culture is. But no, I mean, when I first started being on stage was when I had to confront the thing that you're saying, which is, you know, I'm gonna, you know, my dad worked. I think this is a line from Sleepwalk With Me where it's like he worked his whole life to send me to college so that I could learn stuff, and I didn't. And then I got a job making fun of him in front of strangers. So that whole thing backfired. You got to listen to this. If you like this show, I'm telling you, you got to listen to Sleepwalk With Me on Spotify. It's at the audio of the show. I think you'll like it because
that's
a line from it.
And I love the movie, but now
it'll give you the context of like some of the sleeping bag stuff and that kind of silliness.
Oh my God. Well, you have a line in the film version of Sleepwalk With Me where the dad is driving him. And what does he say? He says something so horrendous about like real life or like you need some, I forgot the line, but it was so
shocking. And that's true, by the way. What you're describing is like my dad growing up would be like, you know, I would be like, I'm going to be a comedian. And he'd be like, I want to be a comedian. And he would say, you need some goddamn reality testing.
Reality testing. That was it.
So the late, great James Rebhorn passed away, played my dad in the movie. He said that line, I thought, quite well.
So well. It hit home for me, which, but it's so funny because, like, right now, my husband and I are writing this sitcom for ABC, the pilot episode together about our family, and it's a multicam sitcom. And it's so crazy because I feel like my parents always, you know, as most good parents do, like they want their child to be successful. And like, I'm finally getting paid to like do this thing.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
That feels really big. And it's such a double-edged sword because I'm like, you guys always wanted this for me. You always wanted me to get like a real job.
Yeah.
But my real job is going to like include you.
I think like, they can. I think they can handle.
Speaking
from a point of experience of having my parents really not want to be public people and exposing them. I think that love. I'm trying to think of who says this. I think this is from The Odyssey. Love conquers all. I think your parents love you and that will conquer any feelings of feeling out.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I think as long as it's successful, no one
will
mind.
Yeah, that's sure.
I'll just have to make it to Broadway. So, okay. So, Mike, in closing, you know, I mentioned earlier that you're cognizant of the fact that the world's falling apart. So how much of that do you share with your child, who obviously is so young still, but like, how do you protect her innocence or how will you protect her innocence as she grows up in Brooklyn?
Wow. You know, you're the only person that's asked me that. Cause yeah, the first half of the show is the 7 reasons why no one should have a child. And it's a very elaborate thing. And the second half is how we had a child and how I was right. And then ultimately it turns on itself and in a way that's sort of emotional. And yeah, it's, you know, that's a great question. I mean, we try to talk to her a lot about the environment and animals and kindness for people. And we try to think of holidays as being much more about sort of the kindness behind the holiday, as opposed to the consumerism behind the holiday. And, those are just off the top of my head. I think everybody's sort of trying to do their best. I don't think anybody has the magic bullet for how to raise a child in a world that is so unusual as this one is.
Well, I'm going to be giving away 5 copies of Little Astronaut to listeners in an Instagram giveaway. So keep an eye out for that. You can see the new one at the Court Theater until January 20th. So get your butts there. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you so much. And great to meet you. And I hope to meet you in person someday.
So again, you can find tickets and more information at thenewone.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram. Keep a lookout for the giveaway we're doing. And yeah, definitely check in next week for our conversation with Casey Levy, who plays Elsa in Frozen on Broadway. All right, everybody. Until next week, trust in your goodness, live out your greatness, rock on, Atomic Moms.